There's been something on my mind, brethren, that we should guard against. And for the title of this sermonette, it would be Situation, Ethics, and Compromise. The Merriam-Webster's Dictionary defines situation, ethics, and compromise as a system of ethics by which acts are judged within their context instead of by categorical principles. Now, to me, that's a mouthful. It's a bit complicated, I think. It can be better summed up by saying it's easy to be moral when times are good. The world we live in today is rapidly deteriorating. The former Secretary of Defense, Hagel, who was under the former administration, was updating troops about some issues in the Pacific region and in the Middle East. Secretary Hagel was taking questions from some of the Marines and gave a stark assessment of the global security situation. He stated, "The world is exploding all over." And this is what cost him his job. The president asked him to resign shortly thereafter because he was telling the truth. There is a very low threshold now for people. Too many are willing to compromise at the drop of a hat. And they have the philosophy that the end justifies the means. America's moral fiber is at its lowest that it's ever been. During the Great Depression, people didn't loot and pillage. They had been raised with higher moral standards. The country was more Bible-oriented at that time. How many riots have we seen in recent years? The riots in Ferguson, Missouri, of just a few years ago, seemed to kick off the recent surge. The rioters were there to get and destroy, and many of them had come from the outside areas. When people form into mobs, it lends them to certain anonymity and perceived freedom to do things they wouldn't normally do, and do things they may want to do, but are afraid for fear of being caught. Now, as a former state trooper, I can attest to this fact with first-hand experience. Where is the church, the ecclesia? Are we ready for bad times? We've seen how many in the church compromised in the great apostasy, and their lives, their jobs, and their possessions weren't even at stake. They weren't being persecuted. The tribulation hadn't started yet. They gave up a lot of the truth. Some gave up all the truth. What will they do when things get bad? Better yet, what will we do? It's easy to compromise on what seems to be small things. What if we're told we have to get an inoculation, or be quarantined, or even being jailed for our beliefs? In 1981, I was attending services in Dallas, Texas. It was the winter, and we had a great snowstorm there. And services were canceled. But I braved the snow and went to services, and the minister was there. And we were talking, and another couple came in. They had braved the storm. And the minister informed them that services were canceled. The husband turned to the wife and said, "I guess we'll just go catch a movie." For them, compromise wasn't that difficult. How about the example of David and Saul? David had a few opportunities to kill Saul, but he didn't. He could have very easily used the situation ethics to justify it. Saul was desperately trying to kill David. What would we have done in that situation? Saul was God's anointed, but David could have reasoned that he was God's anointed too. But what did David do? This story we're familiar with begins in 1 Samuel chapter 24. And we know the story that David found Saul in a cave. And in 1 Samuel chapter 24 and verse 4, we'll read that. "And the men of David said unto him, Behold, the day of which the Eternal has said unto you, Behold, I will deliver your enemy into your hand, that you may do to him as it shall seem good unto you. In other words, David's men were encouraging him to put Saul to the sword. And they were reasoning, it was very reasonable to them, that Saul was being put in David's hands. Then David arose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privately. David had put it in God's hands. He had shown Saul that David had him in his sights. And it came to pass afterward that David's heart struck him because he had cut off Saul's skirt. David not only didn't kill Saul, but he repented of what he had done by disrespecting Saul's office. Conversely, we have an example of someone who was faced with a similar circumstance and made a poor choice. In 2 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 1, we read, "And it happened after the death of Saul, David returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, and David stayed 2 days in Ziklag. On the third day, behold, a man came out of the camp of Saul with his clothes torn and the earth upon his head. And David said unto him, Where do you come from? And he said to him, I have escaped out of the camp of Israel. And David said to him, How did this matter go? Please tell me. And he answered, The people have fled from the battle, and many of the people also have fallen and are dead. And Saul and his son Jonathan are dead also. And David said unto the young man who told him, How do you know that Saul and his son Jonathan are dead? And the young man who told him said, As I happened to be upon Mount Gilboa, behold, Saul leaned upon his spear, and lo, the chariots and horsemen followed hard after him. Then he looked behind him and saw me, and called to me. And I answered, Here am I. And he said to me, Who are you? And I answered him, I am an Amalekite. He said unto me again, Please stand over me and kill me, for anguish has come upon me because all my life is still in me. Now here's a situation that requires some thinking. What to do? Certainly a case to be made for mercy killing. Besides, it was the king himself ordering him to slay him. And surely David would reward him for killing the man who had been trying to kill him for years. Let's see how that worked out. As I stood over him and killed him because I was sure that he could not live after he had fallen, and I took the crown on his head and the bracelet on his arm and have brought them here to my lord. And David took hold on his garment and tore them, and likewise all the men with him did also. They all mourned and wept and fasted until evening. And David said, Were you not afraid to stretch forth your hand to destroy the Eternal's anointed? And David called one of the young men and said, Go, fall on him. And he struck him so that he died. And David said unto him, Your blood be upon your head, for your mouth has testified against you, saying, I have slain the Eternal's anointed. You see, there was two ways of handling the way David handled Saul and the way the Amalekite handled Saul. One was God's way, the other way was carnal thinking. And we can see what happened with the Amalekite. I was watching a YouTube here recently, and there was a police officer arresting someone illegally. And the policeman said to the person, The president isn't following the Constitution, so I don't have to. Now that's interesting because both of those men, both the highest office in the land, the President of the United States, and the policeman, have to take an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I know that because I have had to take that oath twice in my career. We took, at baptism, an irreversible commitment. when we were baptized and hadn't laid on us, we became God's children, begotten children. And there's no turning back. Another example of compromise was Job's wife. Job's wife tried to get her husband to succumb to compromise. What did she tell Job during the worst time of his life? Remember in Job chapter 2 and verse 9? And his wife said to him, "Do you still hold to your integrity? Curse God and die." We all know that Job was one of the most righteous men who ever lived. He lived according to God's law. And so too did his wife, evidently. But when Job's problems started, she was ready to throw in the towel. Job wasn't. And Job answered her. But he said to her, "You speak as one of the foolish ones speak. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God? And shall we not receive evil?" It shouldn't be evil. It should be adversity, because God doesn't give out evil. In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. Compromise and situation ethics go hand in hand. In situation ethics, we tend to lean on human reasoning. We let our carnal reasoning interfere with our being led by God's Holy Spirit. We are entering a time of testing as never before since the first century church. The Bible states that there was never been a time like this ever before and never will be. Let's turn to Revelation chapter 2. And in Revelation chapter 2 and verse 9 we read, "I know your works and tribulation and poverty, but you are rich. And I know the blasphemy of those saying themselves to be Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan." That's bad, but apparently much worse is coming. Forewarned is forearmed. We know what's going to happen to this world. Are we making ourselves ready? Or are we going to collapse at the first hint of things going, as we say, south in Texas? In the movie, Kingdom of Heaven, it was during the Crusades that Saladin had besieged Jerusalem. And he had stated that when he conquered Jerusalem, that if you didn't convert to Islam, you were going to be put to the sword. So they went to the Catholic priest and said, what are we going to do? And the Catholic priest's advice was, well, convert now, but repent later. That pretty much sums up the idea of situation ethics. We don't have that option, brethren. How many will do this when the Catholic Church begins to ride the beast? We have seen in the history of the church already, in the correspondence course, in lesson 52, and on page 10, records of the Catholic Church in Norway mention obstinate keepers of the Sabbath at Bergen and at Oslo about 1435. Now, this is a long time ago, brethren. 1435. Apparently, these people followed the familiar pattern of sitting among the Sunday congregation at Mass, but privately kept a true Sabbath, and no doubt other true doctrines also. How many brethren are doing this very thing now? Sitting in congregations that are allowing makeup, birthdays, and any number of doctrinal changes, thinking it won't affect them. We've all heard the old saying, one bad apple will spoil the whole barrel. But we can truthfully say the reverse of that as well. One good apple won't make the rest good. The best way to not fall prey to situation ethics and to compromise is to simply follow God's law, no matter what. In summary, brethren, people fall prey to situation ethics and compromise because they leave God out. God is not a viable option for them. They end up with two choices, neither of which is desirable. So they must choose the lesser of two evils. Now, the lesser of two evils is still evil. With God in the picture, this wouldn't have to be. A person would rely on God to get them out of the problem. A compromising situation or situation ethics can be handled in two ways: letting our fear overcome our faith in God, or letting faith overcome our fear.